I want to get right into this interview today because it's like gold. Nothing is better than gold. My guests are Naomi Rawlings, Lydia Scherer, Nick Thacker, and Martha Carr. Four authors who were part of my month one SPAC bookstore program. What is SPAC? It's Self-Published Author Cooperative. I've been advertising for it on the podcast quite a bit over the past few months, and it is a great way, a proven way, to get your books in bookstores. I need more authors part of the program. And so the one thing I want to mention for you is that in order to be considered to be part of the program, you have to join the program. And the best way that I can think to do that is to charge you $5. Why would I charge $5? Because it tells me you're serious enough to put a little bit of money into this system. It's the only money I'm going to ask you for at this time. In the future, might I ask for a small portion of the book sales that we give you getting into bookstores? Perhaps, because I don't know how else to run a company without making money. But right now, none of my authors pay anything other than $5 to be part of the database. And it is a lifetime subscription. I'd never ask you for more money. I think it's important that you know that you're going to pay $5 to be one of the authors and that you're willing to do that because it says something about your seriousness. Not everybody who would give me $5 will ever be picked to be part of the program because I have to verify that your book sales are good enough that when you go into that bookstore, you stand a great chance of selling books. That's how we do this. It is a selective program to be selected, but you cannot be selected if you don't give the $5 to be part of the program. I know I'm pushing on that $5 thing a lot. It's because I don't want any false expectations. I want you to understand that there is a small one-time investment in order to be considered. And the reason I do it is because anybody listening who's like, why would I pay $5 for this opportunity if it's not even guaranteed, is not the kind of author that I want to be part of the program. I want you to listen to the podcast. I want you to love it. But pretty much everything we talk about on here is going to cost you some kind of financial outlay at some point, whether you join AMMO, whether you decide to publish on Amazon, you're going to need to pay for covers and formatting. None of it comes free. You can't do it for free. And so your level of commitment talks a lot about the level of success you're going to have. I said this was going to be brief, and yet I've probably scared away 90% of listeners. If you're still here and you think you might want to be an author in bookstores, but you don't have a publisher who is pushing you, then this might be the perfect opportunity for you. Without further ado, please enjoy my interview with the Month One SPAC authors.
This is TRBM Ammo Edition. If you're a published author and want to make a living writing books and selling them to avid readers, you've come to the right place. There's simply no program that's more successful at driving readers towards the books you've written. So the only thing you have to worry about is writing a great book. And the system within Ammo takes care of the rest. Thanks for listening to this conversation.
We're going to talk a little bit about SPAC, Self-Published Author Cooperative, and the ups and downs. I have been kind of the one to spearhead this whole thing, and there have been some unexpected challenges. So I thought the best way to reach more authors who can participate in this with us and to reach more bookstores is to speak with the people whose books are going into stores and talk a little bit about your experiences. I know that you've had probably positive experiences and negative experiences, and I don't want you to hold back on either of those. So for just kind of maybe some summary comments, let's go around the horn. So I'll start in the order that it is on my screen. Martha, when I approached you to be part of SPAC, what were your original thoughts?
It's an idea I've heard others come up with, but you're the first person who ever actually took action and did something. And I think it's a great idea. There's no reason why we should not be in bookstores. And I hope it continues to spread and other authors join us. And it becomes a thing that readers actually will start to go into bookstores and ask for the books as a result. I think it's great. And thank you for doing it, by the way.
Yeah, you bet. It's been a pleasure. I've enjoyed it. Naomi, how about you?
I was thrilled to jump on the opportunity because as an indie author, there aren't very many opportunities for bookstores. And I don't really feel like I have a lot of good ways to reach out to bookstores and let them know that my books are available. And so it's a lot easier for me to just reach readers directly online and tell them a lot of times about my ebooks, sometimes about my paperbacks. It's not that I don't want to support bookstores, but I feel like the infrastructure for authors communicating with bookstore owners, indie authors communicating with bookstore owners, just isn't there. And you're kind of bridging that gap. And so I was thrilled to jump in and I'm like, you know, I don't really care like if it's amazingly profitable and I sell a ton of books or even if it's just me like dipping my toes in and getting used to dealing with bookstores and figuring out more of how this works. It sounded like a great opportunity regardless of like the outcome.
Yeah, absolutely. And then Nick.
I feel like I can only parrot what you guys have said. Nothing really to add other than we as authors don't need more initiatives to tackle on our own. We need far fewer. And so when this was, you know, coming up, it was great because it was like, hey, here's a new way of doing something that we've always wanted to do. But the icing on the cake was there's somebody else to spearhead this and somebody that we can sort of follow in some way, which is what I want. You know, a lot of times I don't need new ideas of things to do. I need somebody to at least take point. And that doesn't mean they do everything. And I think I told you this, Jody, separately on a phone call, like I'm happy to help, but I want a boss. I want somebody to tell me what to do. I want to just figure this all out myself. So that was the beauty of it for me. It was a program where I don't have to pick up the phone and call 15 indie bookstores. Although I believe that's probably what needed to happen. I don't have time to do that. I don't have the bandwidth for that. And so this was such a beautiful marriage because it was like, well, this is exactly what we need. And there's somebody who's willing to take initiative and take the lead on this.
Yeah. It's exciting for me in the sense that I agree with you. There's a huge time commitment, maybe even more than I realized when I started. Every good thing I've ever done has been out of stupidity because I didn't realize how hard it would be. And that includes being an author. I thought like I'll write a book and people will love it and I'll be everywhere and people will love me. They'll be like that Jody Chase Sperling. He's sure charming. it's not the case, but yeah, so I love it. And then Lydia, I know that you have limited time, so I'm going to kind of hit you with the 1-2 punch. First off, what was your initial experience of being a starting author with SPAC? What were your initial reservations and like, why did you decide to be one of the first authors?
Well, I'll start out with the good stuff. Can you guys hear me okay, by the way?
Yes.
Okay. Just the first time I've spoken. I want to make sure I'm good to go on the mic. Well, I really enjoyed getting to partner directly with these bookstores through your, you know, everything that you arranged, Jody, in terms of getting to share like, hey, guys, you know, this bookstore has just stocked my books. Here's their page. Like, go and support them. Like, I have a ton of fans all over the United States. And honestly, I mean, I have fans in Australia and UK and Canada and around the world, but I mean, I was surprised how many people commented like, hey, like, yeah, I know that bookstore, like that's in my town. Like, and people were like, hey, I'll stop by there and say hi and check out your books. And it was just really special to me to be able to support indie bookstores in that way, in a way that I could not have done by myself because I'm raising 3, soon to be 4 kids and running a business to support my whole family. I do not have the time to track down bookstores, pitch them my book, and like get all their info. And so I was super excited when you approached me initially about doing this because I thought, I mean, even if it didn't really go anywhere, like even if it petered out at some point, even if, you know, not a ton of bookstores participated, like, it's not like it's costing me anything in terms of I'm not doing the legwork, you're doing the legwork, which hopefully, you know, you are getting a benefit from that as well, in terms of getting your book out there and everything. And so I was just really excited about an opportunity to promote other, like to promote indie bookstores, to get people going to bookstores instead of just buying on Amazon, because it, you know, I don't blame people for buying on Amazon. We're so busy. We're so tired. Like, and we're trying to make every penny count. Like, it's so easy to just hop on Amazon, find the book you want in 5 seconds and hit buy, like one click buy. That's so easy. It's way harder than driving down the street to the bookstore and looking around, you know? So, I mean, I don't blame people for that at all. It's not a bad business model, but I love and treasure our indie bookstores for the community that they provide. And I just was really excited about an opportunity to help promote that. And I hope that we can do more stuff like that and, you know, share more links of, hey, this book just stocked our books and go check it out. So that was one of the main draws for me. And also just getting to work with fellow indie authors that I already know and love. Hi, Naomi. You know, because I knew you when you approached me, I didn't have any reservations really. If it had been a complete stranger, I would have been like, is this like a scam? Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
But no, having, you know, known you already, like I knew, well, I don't understand what Jody's doing really. Cause I don't do all that like fulfillment stuff, not fulfillment. You told me that I had asked about it. You told me that you used to work in, warehousing and all this stuff. I'm like, well, I don't understand all that stuff, but if you can get my books to a bookstore, I'll send it to you. So that all worked out great.
What is author marketing mastery through optimization, you ask? I'm going to tell you. It's the best way for us authors to make a living selling our books. Are you tired of hearing gurus tell you your book is only good enough to be a lead magnet for services? Are you tired of feeling like you have to be a slave to social media and then frustrated when the time you spend doesn't actually help you sell books? I was too, until I found Ammo. Ammo is the only program that reliably produces results, and it works for anyone. Is it hard work? You bet. Do you have to overcome some of your own prejudices to make Ammo work for you? Absolutely. But rather than being another program that rah-rah shish-goom-bahs tries to get you emotionally excited only to offer unclear methods, Ammo shows you how to design profitable ads step-by-step through a unique, highly tested, and targeted formula. The founder, Steve Piper, is a data-loving, formula-driven author who escaped the kingdom of Amazon to build a platform for himself, where he sold directly to his readers and built a loyal following and millions of copies sold. With Ammo, you know who's reading your books, how to contact them, and what they want to read next. If you've always been frustrated with Amazon's wall of mystery of not knowing who's reading your books and losing 50 to 70% of your hard-earned money that you're making through sales, Ammo solves all of those problems by putting you in the driver's seat and showing you how to fulfill your books directly to your readership. Click the link in the show notes to learn more.
Yeah, it has worked well. It's funny, as I'm hearing you talk, it reminds me of some of the challenges I didn't know I was going to have initially, which is every bookstore has an opportunity to return our books. And that felt really scary to me at first, because I knew we can't play baseball in the big leagues unless we can do what all the other teams in the big leagues are doing. And that means that I have to be able to take returns. I was initially a little bit scared for a couple reasons. One is I wanted to be able to go in without charging them for shipping. So I wanted our books to be priced at such a level that we could still at least make a couple of bucks on any order. It wasn't ever going to be a big deal, but I thought, this is as close to free advertising as anything I can think of. Because if they make that order and I give them a 50% wholesale cost, then I can get into that bookstore paying shipping and still make a couple of dollars. But then that return thing scared the crap out of me, because I thought, where do they send it to make it easy? I do have answers for that now. And that was based on my own sort of like ruminating and sleepless nights. I literally had sleepless nights where I was like, how do I behave like a professional? How do I make these bookstores really come to appreciate what we're doing? So I love what you say, because it is actually very low risk for all of us. And that's probably the most exciting piece. Talk to me a little bit, Lydia, again, because your time is short. I'm going to focus on you for just a minute here. But talk to me a little bit, because you are already straddling both worlds. You've got traditional feet in the business, and you've got self-published. What was the sense of urgency? Did you see there being a real benefit in getting Love Lies Hocus Pocus into stores, or was it just kind of all gravy? I mean, urgency versus practicality, I guess, is my question.
So I do not make money selling books in bookstores. It's kind of a sad fact, but it's just a fact. That's not to say that bookstores aren't great. It's not to say I don't want my books in bookstores, but the reason I have my book, the reason I want my books in bookstores is not because of the money it makes me, though. Of course I have to make something or else it doesn't pay for the printing of the book. But the money that we make that supports my family and feeds my kids is direct sales directly to readers through my website. And so that's like the engine that keeps me, you know, writing and keeps me in business. However, I see indie bookstores and bookstores in general, but I mean, you know, it's mainly indie bookstores that you're focusing on from what I understand, as opposed to like Barnes and Nobles and chain stuff. Those are a very important part of the puzzle that I think help with the, exponential growth of a brand, right? Is that people seeing my book in a bookstore, like if they saw an ad on Facebook, they're like, oh man, that looks kind of interesting, but I mean, it's an ad on Facebook. And then they see my book in a bookstore, I'm like, wait a minute, I saw that on Facebook. Like they must, she must be like a legit, hey, I'll buy that. You know, like it's a marketing law of seven touches. And so part of it is, you know, it's really not about the money. We have to make something because we have to pay for costs. But really it's about one, providing convenience and enjoyment for readers, which really matters to me. Like I genuinely want readers to be happy, to have fun, to feel like authors want to meet them where they are. I also want indie bookstores to succeed because I think they're important places of community and I don't want them to disappear. And I do benefit, and I think we all benefit from just the overall like exponential, like snowball marketing effect of, you know, being in bookstores, being seen, having a little bit more of a legitimate factor, and then people seeing our books in multiple formats in multiple places, online and in real life. And it also gives them a way to like send like through their friend, like, hey, you want to go to the bookstore and like grab this book, or, oh, hey, I'll grab this book because I know my mom will probably like it or something, like that impulse buy in the bookstore. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, all of those factors are working together to make something like this something that I want to support and that I'm willing to go to effort for that doesn't necessarily make me a lot of money because the benefits are kind of in other ways. And those online ads are what's paying my bills and enabling me to do like these other ancillary things.
Sure. Absolutely. You have a book launch that you're about to get to. So,
I'm heading off. Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say to make sure.
The book came out a couple weeks ago, but the bookstore wanted to do it today because they have like these Wednesday night readings and stuff. So, but I really appreciate being able to pop in and just contribute a few words. And I love seeing y'all. Hi, Nick. Hi, Naomi. Hi, Martha. Any last questions before I hop off here again?
Only just let people know who are listening where they can find you and connect with you.
Yeah, absolutely. It is www.lydiashare.com. It is my name. If my spelling of my name is too hard to remember, because me too, at lovelizenhocuspocus.com. It also goes right to my books. That's the name of the world that I write in for my urban fantasy. If you like magic, adventure, talking cats, you may enjoy my works. It's great for Harry Potter fans, stuff like that. So, Jody, thanks for all that you do. Yeah. And you know, I hope we can get other authors involved in this and help this network grow. Indies supporting indies and indies working together to build networks that, you know, enable us to retain those communities that are so important and that can unfortunately be easily, you know, swept aside and crushed by, you know, big marketing companies, or not marketing companies, but big companies doing easy marketing. So I really enjoy the opportunity to get to lean into this. So thank you, Jody.
Thank you. Have fun at your book launch.
Awesome.
Party like it's 1999.
Yeah, I've got buttercream icing cookies that I had custom made for it. So I want to go enjoy me some cookies.
Very good. Very good.
Thank you. All right. See you guys.
See you. So this kind of reminds me of the aspect that a couple of you touched on in ways either that you knew me, and so maybe some of the initial hesitation to be part of SPAC was dampened, or maybe you just thought, like, what's the worst thing that could happen is like nothing happens, which frankly the last couple of months has been kind of true. I have not done a lot of work on SPAC since right around Christmas. I think I alluded to it in an email. Whether this is something that matters to you or not, or you believe should matter to me. I had a cat named Chewy. He was with me for 15 years. He literally slept in my arms every night. My wife, originally early in our marriage, said she was jealous of him because of how fond I was of him. He passed away. And that hit me from more directions than I really was prepared to deal with. And I kind of just stopped being a productive human for a little while, and felt really guilty about it. But we're kind of back up and going again. One of the cool things about SPAC is that once you have a relationship with a bookstore, that relationship stays. And that has been something that I've taken a deep breath and just realized, I know I made the right choice here. And to be part of this with you guys is so meaningful to me, because I reached out to the Bookworm, which was our first big customer, and I didn't have to sell again. I just said, are you ready for your next round of books? And Beth said, absolutely. And so that was really exciting. But one of the things that has been difficult is finding authors. So the next question I have, I want to hear each of you respond to, is if you were a stranger to SPAC, talk to me a little bit about your reservations, and maybe say something to the prospective listener who is in a position where they should be in bookstores. I'll cut the question there. And again, we'll just go around the screen. So Martha.
So I've been in this business a long time. I started as a traditionally published author, and I know the ins and outs of trying to get a book in a bookstore. So, and I know how hard it is, and I don't see a downside. I don't really see a downside. I mean, if you didn't manage to get any books in a bookstore, I'm no worse off than when we started. And if you do get them in there, I'm happy to support the books and do whatever I can. And that's a few more books sold in a different place. So, and I've been doing this a long time. And every shiny object we find, I know that 1,000 other authors will tromp on in, and eventually it'll become useless. And so I just try anything that sounds reasonable, doesn't have a huge expense to it, isn't someone selling me a system, I'm willing to try. And this is a good idea. We belong in bookstores because it's another avenue of selling. So why wouldn't I support your efforts? I know how hard the heavy lifting you're doing is. You're basically having to do a sales pitch over and over and over again.
Yeah.
And I know that sometimes people hear the words indie author and their reaction is a little less than stellar, but that's what we're going to change, because we're way too big a part of the market for people to keep ignoring. And by people, I mean sellers of any kind.
Yes.
And also I think bookstore owners may have started to see bigger names venturing out of traditional publishing into indie, because why keep giving away the profits? So they know that if they want to find some really good authors, and it's a chance for them to show off some really good authors to their readers who come in, that they won't find any other way. Frankly, too, if I call a lot of bookstores because I'm looking for urban fantasy and ask them, what they recommend to me is barely urban fantasy and is a little too literary for my taste.
Okay.
It's a little funky. So for fans of urban fantasy, I mean, they're going to have to start looking at us. So I'm happy to join.
I think it's a really good point. And I think that it highlights maybe one of our strengths and our weaknesses, is that more books right now are being read by self-published authors than traditionally published authors. It's not a commonly understood, but there are more books being read that were self-published than published through the machine. And yet we're not in bookstores. So just imagine what happens as we start to get a little bit of a grip in that market. I think it helps to right-size what the reading public actually wants. And that is risk-taking. Like you said, maybe some of the urban fantasy out there is a little bit too literary. But what I love, too, is that self-published authors very frequently are blending genres. It seems to happen quite a bit that self-published authors are like, oh, I don't know, am I urban fantasy? Or maybe I'm a little bit sci-fi, or maybe I'm both of those things, or maybe I'm romance and horror. And being able to self-publish, you don't have to worry as much about market positioning if you can just get out there and really charm your readers through a program like Ammo. Naomi, I know that you also were traditionally published before you started to self-publish. So I'd love to hear your thoughts about bookstores then, bookstores now, and what made you comfortable. Not what made you comfortable, but what would maybe you say to somebody who was thinking about being part of SPAC?
Well, I was traditionally published, but I was published by like Harlequin's Inspirational or Christian line. So they almost like run their business like a magazine company. Like they pay for shelf space and their books are distributed every month and they're going to go out to stores where they like have shelf space automatically. So it's not the same as like the Barnes and Noble looking at the catalog of books releasing from a different publisher and being like, I think we're going to pre-order 20 copies of this book because we expect it's going to sell. That's how most authors get into bookstores when they're with a traditional publisher. So I was different in all of that, and that I didn't really need to go through the process of like, oh, how many pre-orders did we get when the book, you know, first went out? Depends on how large the print run is, depends on that, like how well, you know, the publisher's going to think that the book does it give an extra marketing budget based on the pre-orders, or does it pull it? I didn't have all that kind of drama to go along with it. It was a really cool feeling to see my book, you know, on the shelf of my local Walmart. I definitely took a picture or 25,000, you know, because that's just a cool feeling, especially for a first time author. But in terms of telling someone new, like why they should want to get involved in this, I think if I'm the new person and I didn't know Jody previously, I'm going to do some research on you, which means I'm going to listen to some of your podcasts, and then I'm going to be really impressed, and I'm going to be like, wow, this guy knows what he's talking about. I probably want to work with him. Because seriously, like that happened to me the first time you approached me. I'm like, oh, okay, I'll do a podcast. Then I start listening to your podcast, and I'm like, oh, this is really impressive. Like, I had no idea. I feel really cool now. So there's that. And then I think, you know, sometimes with these things, just like word spreading from author to author. So why would I be most apt to do this? Well, if another author I knew who had a business model that I respected and had some things that were working for them, if they approached me and they were like, hey, like I'm working on getting my books into bookstores, would you like to be a part of this? That's the kind of thing that I would listen to. I think word of mouth does really well for the author community for this type of thing, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. That has been something that I've needed to lean into. And I've been fortunate to have people through Steve's program with Ammo, because many of the authors who are part of month one and month two are related to Ammo in one way or another. So that has been helpful. And word of mouth is so important. So yes, like Naomi said, if you're listening right now and you're an author, make sure that you have some good sales history. That's a really important piece that we haven't touched on yet. So I think that'll be the next question. But before we get there, Nick, go ahead and add your thoughts. I'm going to go backwards next time, so you don't have to be the one who's like, okay, they've already said it all. I'll let you go first next time. But finish us off on this one of like, what would you say to the authors who maybe are assessing, is SPAC the right thing for me? That rhymes, by the way.
Well, there you go. There's your slogan. Well, they did say it all, and they're well spoken. So there's not a whole lot to add. I certainly wouldn't change their thoughts on the matter. Really, with new business ventures or opportunities, I believe that when you're getting started, there's probably going to be more opportunity than that's good. That's potentially good than you can actually say yes to. And when you
when you get going into your career, there are a lot of more opportunities that are available to you than you should probably say yes to. So it always seems like there's more opportunity out there than what we can actually commit to. And so the way that I've sort of filtered these opportunities, no matter where you are in your author journey or where I was on my author journey, is to say, one, you know, what does this cost me? Like, is there a financial commitment here? Is there any kind of outlay of my time, resources, energy, money? And in this case, the answer is no, for the most part. I mean, there's a little bit of energy and a little bit of bandwidth, but like I said earlier, you know, you're handling a lot of that for us. There's no financial outlay other than committing to sending a book. And really that's zero for me. You know, it doesn't cost anything for me to send a book effectively. And so there's no downside. You're not asking for my credit card number and, you know, going to charge me a bunch of money and hope this works. And I hope I can, you know, we're not dealing with any of that. So that makes this a really approachable, yes, or approachable venture to say yes to. And then the second thing that I really think is important to acknowledge here is that I do believe that there's not a whole lot in life, really, but really specifically with the indie author world that we can't recover from. So like, even if we could postulate a worst case scenario here that Jody's going to steal all our money, which is not true, by the way, there's no way I can make that leap of logic, but let's say we could. Let's say there is a downside where Jody steals all my money. I just don't believe there's a whole lot we can't recover from or come back from. You know, there's legal protection, there's credit card fraud, there's all kinds of things that, you know, and I know I'm kind of sounding like a really negative person here, but
no, I actually really appreciate
even looking at this positively, like, what are the downsides? And if something happens where I waste a bunch of hours of my life, guys, this isn't rocket science. Like, we're not going to blow people up and people die. Like, it's just books and it's just entertainment. And at the end of the day, we can recover from that. And I hope that makes sense. I'm not diminishing what we do as authors, but people's lives aren't at stake. And so we can recover from whatever, you know, we get ourselves into. And the point of all that is to say, that's how we learn. And so do this, say yes to these opportunities. These are the kind of things that, you know, are here to help us. And if they don't work, that's nobody's fault. That's not a bad thing. It's just, hey, we learned from it. What do we got to do next time to make this work? Look, I have been burned by things similar to this. And, you know, Jody, you know that. And I have been burned to the tune of thousands of dollars, and it sucks. But I recovered from it. Like, it's not the end of the world. Like, we move on, we learn, we you know, fix the mistake and, you know, go forward. And so I think that's just true with this. But there is no financial outlay for this. And so it really does seem like a, you know, hey, this is an opportunity that everyone should say yes to.
I'm 4 books into a 9 book series, and every single day lately, I find myself thinking, boy, it would be great if I had some central location for all of my notes, all of my plot points, character names, family lineages, you name it. I wish it was in one place because, let's be honest, the way that I am using Microsoft Word as a word processor and have 55 different documents to keep track of all of the series details that I need to access, I'm taking more time opening up files wondering, why did I name this one that? Why did I name this one that? And not getting the information I need. Enter Scrivener. You guys know that I do not advertise for things unless A, I'm using them myself, and B, I think that you could up your game, sell more books, do better marketing, and get yourself in the game better. And that is why I am now partnered with Scrivener. If you use the link in the show notes, you get a 30-day free trial, and then you can sign up as well for a discount. Click the link in the show notes to learn more.
I like that. And I also, it gives a really good opportunity to speak to some of your strengths. So you have a very important, very influential role with Draft to Digital. You are the resident entrepreneur on this podcast right now. And so you're the one who, after, I think it was basically like the first sale we had, I realized we didn't get the signage up in the stores that we needed to. And I had a moment where I thought, like, I am not the detail-oriented kind of person who can figure it out. And I hope that I sounded fairly composed, but I reached out to you panicking, like, I don't know how to salvage this because I don't know what to do. And you basically said, really simply, why don't you instruct your authors to include a packing slip? And that's such a simple, easy solution. What I love about SPAC is that, well, I do think there has to be an evolution maybe 6 months down the road. And I talk about months, not necessarily in terms of real months, but in terms of like working with bookstore months. So where I do actually probably have to charge for my services. But to get this thing going, to get people understanding what's happening, all of the original couple of months of authors get me to do this for free so that we can show that we have some legitimacy, build some partnerships and things like that. But even still, I could probably take 10% from all of these transactions as the cost of doing business, and everybody still gets free advertising or basically makes money. So I'll start with you, Nick, and talk about like, what are the things that you think SPAC could evolve to that would make it more successful than it is now? And it's by no means successful, so I'm not a pie in the sky dreaming, but talk to me about like, what's something you think that we could do that would take us a step forward?
There's a lot. I wouldn't say that this isn't successful. I think it is successful because I set my expectation. You can argue low, but I would say I set my expectation, I believe, appropriately, which is this is a new thing. It's an untested model in some sense, but you know, at least with the community that's trying it. And these are untested authors. This is a new team, if you will, in entrepreneurship speak. And so we don't know what's going to happen. And so there's really no way you can even hypothesize, you know, what's the business plan? What should it be? These are just arbitrary numbers we could throw at the wall. And I didn't want to do that. So for that reason, I believe this has been successful. I sold more books than I did without this, right? It doesn't matter that the number was, you know, single digits or double digits. Like it doesn't, that has nothing to do with it because those numbers are arbitrary. So I want to encourage you with that, man. Like this is not a failure, but it may not be where you want it to be. And so let's figure out how to get there. And on that note, I believe going back to that call that you referenced, like I said the same thing to you that I just said earlier, which is, there's nothing we can't recover from. So we forgot to put packing slips in there. Let's just ask our authors to do that. Every single one of us is going to say yes, because it means we get to keep doing this. And, oh, we forgot to put signage up in the bookstores. Let's just tell our bookstore people to put signage up. There's nothing we can't recover from. Like no bookstore is going to be like, there's no packing slips. You're never going to sell your book again. That's just an unreasonable thing, you know, to expect a bookstore owner to do. And so going forward, I think that the way forward is to identify what that success looks like. It's to say, well, man, I think it would be successful in this year, in this quarter, whatever, to get X amount of authors on board, that are new authors on board, or X amount of bookstores. And yeah, sure, we can get into the tactics of doing so, you know, if you want. But really, it comes down to, hey, now we've got a little bit of a model. It's kind of a baby. It's proven. We've got the proof of concept. Yeah. It works, because it does. Like we literally sold books to bookstores, and that's wow, that's great. So how do we scale it up? Well, we look at how much work did it take to do that? Multiply that by your time. Okay. Well, now you ran out of time. So how much is it going to cost us, all of us, to hire somebody to do what you were doing? Is it going to be, you know, valuable expenditure for us? Or can we find that person? Those are the kind of questions we need to start asking. But again, I think I don't have the bandwidth to do all that. And so it's so great to have someone like you on board. Who's like, hey, I may not be the person to be making these phone calls in the future, but I can be the entrepreneur here leading us forward and saying, hey, we need to find somebody who can. That's at least speaking from, you know, only, I'm not going to put words in their mouth, but that is absolutely huge for me, because if it had to be me, it wouldn't get done. And so to have someone like you who can come on and say, well, I think we need to do this next. I can argue with you. I can tell you what I think, but it doesn't matter. But the point is having somebody to at least say, this is what we're going to do, is really, really key. And so I think we're doing the right thing. We just need to keep pushing forward and making those arbitrary numbers more tactical numbers.
Yeah. Naomi, you are, at least from appearances, sort of the right-hand person for Steve with AMMO. And so something happened behind the scenes where you showed extreme value in being a manager of people, a motivator of people. I know from the very little that you and I have interacted that you're exceptionally talented in systems. You are probably the most systematically successful person in AMMO, and you love that. Like your head is built for that. So I'd love to hear from you with the success that you've had at AMMO and helping Steve to build that program and be his voice inside of the Facebook group and elsewhere. What would you say that SPAC should do to evolve to this next step in the coming months to have more success?
Well, I guess I don't really know how to answer that because, like Nick was saying, this is something new. And so when I'm doing something new, I try it and I see what happens. And I used to, 5 years ago, before AMMO, 5 years ago, if initially like what I tried didn't work or there were bumps in it, I would be like, oh no, this isn't going to work. I can't do it anymore. I don't have that mindset anymore. Thank goodness. That was a pretty limiting mindset. And I learn from the things that don't work because the things that don't work teach you things when you're selling your books directly to readers. That's one of the big things we do is we look at like how the readers our potential readers are behaving like on our landing pages and on our personal stores. And we're looking at how they're behaving and then we're like, oh, they don't actually like when I talk about my books like this. They like it when I talk about this part of my books instead of that part of my books. And I feel like it's the same way. So I've then taken that and applied it to like my email marketing and some other things. And I feel like it's the same way when looking at this endeavor here. Like if something doesn't work the first time, okay, like let's just figure out what needs to be fixed and let's do it better next time. And then like after you do a few rounds of getting something that works, then it becomes like, how can we improve it? How can we make it better? So what makes it better? Is it, and like, what are the goals? Like I like having smaller concrete goals that I know that I can reach. So like my goal last year for my business, because I always do so much more money on my own website than I do on Amazon, was to figure out how to make enough money on Amazon that I could pay all my business expenses just with my Amazon stuff in case the direct sales thing, you know, like with presidential elections or whatever, like if I just couldn't get that to work for a month, I wanted Amazon to like be my backup. And I did that and it took me a year and it was slow and it was incremental improvements. And now I'm very happy with where my Amazon sales are in terms of meeting like my monthly business budget. And I feel like this is like the same way. So what's like the next thing that would be more successful? Would it be more bookstores? Would it be more authors? Would it be more, you know, would it be both? Like what is the blend of those things look like? At what point can we start monetizing this so that it's not just Jody volunteering all his time and learning, but Jody actually gets paid for some of his time as he does this? And I think, you know, as is true with any new business endeavor, you probably, the very beginning is where you work the hardest and you get paid the very least, right?
Yes,
but
absolutely.
The more you improve and the more you grow a skill and the more you learn, that puts you more in the position of sometimes making an obscene amount of money for the amount of work that you're doing because you're the one with the knowledge and the skills and the infrastructure. So that's just like the arc of any small business, you know? And it's exciting to kind of watch you go through this. And you know, I'm here to help you do my part, but I'm not the one talking to the people and I'm not the one getting it all coordinated. Like that's you. And you're like, what can we do better? I'm like, I think you're doing phenomenal because my books are like in stores and in front of readers that they wouldn't be without this program. And like one of the most exciting emails I've gotten like this year at all was when you emailed me and you were like, so our first bookstore sold out of all of your books in like two or three weeks. And it was like, they did? Like, I had no idea that would happen. I was like thinking, oh, people will just send them all back. Because it's my first time actually having books in a bookstore, like standing on their own merit, you know, not with Harlequin, like, oh, we're just going to plaster everything here. And then half of them get sent back. I'm like, you put it in a real bookstore with like real people and they all sold out. I'm like, I had no clue.
So it's a fun story actually, because I don't know what I ever expect. Maybe I trust and I consider myself at this point in my life to be a spiritual person with a slight inclination toward like the Protestant tradition. But I say that because there was a sense where I just said, I'm going to trust God, the universe, this higher power, to give me the right lineup of authors to get in these stores and like, we're going to win because I got the right authors. That was probably the unstated biggest risk that I took, was if I put authors in this store that I'm friends with or that I love their books, but I don't know that they're proven, any of those things could make SPAC a failure. But what is really cool is that when we got in there, we all sold tremendously well over the holidays. And I had bookstore people coming back and saying, I sold out. I don't have any left. Unfortunately, the Enigma strain just doesn't sell. So that's the one book that I'm going to have to take a bunch of returns on. kidding, Nick.
I could have told you that before we started. Nobody likes that stupid book.
It's been very, very successful. And among the successes, Naomi, it is true that you are a month two author and a month one author, because it was that book where people were like, I need more. I have to have more of this. So that was really exciting. All right. So you have the unfortunate third answer, Martha. I am 100% open to hearing any kind of feedback. If you were running this show, is there something that stands out that you're like, oh, I might try this because this could help us succeed as a team?
The only thing I would think about doing is, you know, you always want to go to the single source who can place as many places as possible so that you do less work, reach more. And that would be distributors. And like, and also if we could appear in airports and grocery stores will only allow books through a distributor. Right. And once you sell the distributor, they tend to take your books over and over again. And this is where what you're doing is an advantage, because they won't do that for an individual author, but they might do it for you.
Yes.
And then we could start to appear in bookstores and airports, which actually sell more books than individual bookstores these days. People stopping, getting on a flight, they forgot to get something. And yeah, so that's what I would do. Bookstores and little bookstores also use distributors. So at some point you may have so many authors and so many bookstores that it doesn't pay anymore to call individually, and you might want to look at a distributor. Yeah. However, the one downside of a distributor is they tend to push the titles that are already doing well. And we could get lost in the mix unless we have already risen to the place where we start to look like the easiest thing to promote is us.
Yeah.
But that's the only thing I would start looking at, is particularly if you want to hit those airports, you're going to have to talk to a distributor.
Absolutely. There are a few collectives that manage, like there's the Midwest Collective, there's the Rocky Mountain Collective. There's some places that I have reached out to. It's funny because by being larger and controlling more volume and having relationships with more people, they're also much more difficult to get in touch with. And right. So that's been kind of the trade-off, is you reach out and don't hear anything back, or you talk to somebody and they're like, oh yeah, it's Ted. Ted's the guy you need to talk to. How do I get a hold of Ted? Well, you could send an email to info@blahblahblah.com. And I'm like, was Ted ever going to see that? Probably not. And you're just like, well, this is fun. I agree with you though. And I want to confess to everybody listening and to all of you on this podcast right now that the biggest issue that I have to work through in my own life is my limiting belief in what I can do. I've been going to a lot of comic expos, thanks to Lydia for kind of getting me started down that road. And for the longest time, I was selling my books for like one for 15, three for 35. And I met a person last week at one of these shows, and he's like, that's stupid cheap. You need to raise your prices. And I was like, no one will buy my books if they're more expensive. And it really hit me at a visceral level that sometimes I take smaller actions because I believe that that's all that I deserve. With that in mind, I do actually want to talk about what qualifies an author to be part of SPAC. So we'll shake it up. Naomi, talk to me a little bit about how an author would know that it's the right time to maybe approach SPAC about getting on the lineup, because we all agree we want more authors, but there is actually a certain level of sales and achievement that makes you a good fit for this program. I hate being exclusive like this, but I think it's really important to understand. You have sold hundreds of thousands of books and made a lot of money doing what you're doing, and you're a perfect author for this for that reason. So they don't have to be as successful as you, but talk to me a little bit about what makes an author a great fit for SPAC.
I would probably look for, I guess, two things. One is a certain income threshold. So I would say at least $100,000 a year, maybe more. I don't know how high you would want to go with it, but I would say at least a certain income threshold. And then I would probably look for authors who can prove some kind of success outside of Kindle Unlimited. Kindle Unlimited is its own beast of a thing. And in some ways, it's probably easier to make money in Kindle Unlimited than it is selling everything completely on your own website. Because there's like Amazon will help you out if they know that you're a proven author within their system. But just because something sells well in Amazon's ecosystem that is Kindle Unlimited, not like the hardcover titles in those kinds of things, but just in Kindle Unlimited, does that necessarily translate into bookstores? Or does that necessarily mean there's like a market outside of the whole, I can read an unlimited number of books per month? So I guess if there's something I would say, I would look for someone who's got some kind of, I'm selling on my website, or some of my books are in KU, some of them are wide. But you can prove more than just, I have a KU only strategy. And once I get outside of Kindle Unlimited, I have no clue how to sell books.
Yeah. So. Perfect. Okay. I like that. Nick, add some thoughts to what makes an author a good fit for SPAC.
Well, I think just very simply and succinctly, like if you're successful as an author, you'll be a good fit in SPAC. This program has not and will not make an author successful who wasn't already. The success of the program is there because the authors who are a part of it are successful. I understand that sounds like horn tooting because I'm part of the program, but the truth is, you know, this isn't at the stage where it can be a great promotional tool for a brand new author. That's just not what this is. And so I don't think any new author who's like, wow, you know, I really want to be, this is the secret. No, sorry, it's not. This is going to be something that you look toward and say, well, once I publish 10 books, 15, 20, whatever books, and I know how to do this and I can, you know, support this model, that's when, you know, you would want to approach SPAC or when you would get approached by SPAC. Because again, we're not going to look for authors that don't contribute. And it sounds really harsh to say, right? But why would we pick up an author who can't contribute? Not that we don't like them or anything, but if they don't have a list, if they don't have people selling, people they're selling to, readers that love them, there's really not a whole lot of benefit in adding them to a program that exists solely to put good selling titles in front of, you know, potential new readers. You're not proven yet, I guess. And so it does sound like a good old boys club. It's not, it's a different promotional model. And so it's for an author who, like Naomi said, has a certain income threshold, and maybe that is the metric to use. I don't know, but you have to be successful. You have to be, you know, however you, Jody, get to define this as successful. And if you're not ready for this program.
I like what you say. And it's funny because I think that there are some people listening right now who are trying to decide whether they're qualified, whether they want to reach out. And one of the things that comes to my mind is if you're Matthew McConaughey and you go to a restaurant right now, chances are you eat for free because the restaurant owner really loves that you're there. Your success actually gives you benefits and you're kind of like, he's the last guy in the world that needs to eat for free. What the hell? But, you know, there it is. He's going to eat for free because he's built a pathway where him being there actually earns the restaurant money. That's what each of you is to SPAC, is that each of you earns SPAC money by being who you are. So that would be what I would sum up what you just said, Nick, is if you're the kind of person who can earn money for SPAC, you're the kind of person we want to be part of the program. And that sounds, like you said, maybe not the best, but it's just the truth. We're a flip-flop model. We're not Penguin Random House where we're going to take a flyer on a first-time author and hope that it catches fire. We're actually taking tested authors and putting them in a position to win more.
Martha, we can't forget that there's the middleman here, which is the indie bookstore, right? That's the person who's putting these on their table.
That's perfect.
If we're not bringing people in the door, we're not selling these books on the table,
they're not going to stock us. And then this program doesn't exist for anyone, you know? So it has to be successful authors that we have the numbers to prove, look, these sell. If you put them in front of people's faces, they'll buy them. We already know that.
That's perfectly said. Yes. And Martha, you have the unfortunate third answer to this. So anything that you want to add to what qualifies an author to be part of SPSE?
Well, it's what everybody else has said, it's definitely the income is the easiest way to know that somebody's got the ability to sell, and probably also that they're doing covers that are attracting readers. They've learned a few things. They probably worked a few bugs out. But I got to imagine that indie bookstores are probably also hoping that some of our customers go to their bookstore because they happen to live in the town. Yes. And so that they can actually sell books directly. And, you know, for fans, it's just kind of fun to be able to go and get a book at a bookstore from somebody they really like. Most indie authors are very good at knowing they have to build a relationship with their readers. It's much more personal. And so I can see where a fan would go to a bookstore to buy a book from us just to be nice, because they do love the writing, but they also want to support a new venture. We have that kind of relationship with our readers. And I don't think it does any favors to invite in authors who aren't going to do well. They're not going to feel success at it. It will hurt the venture. And it's just a place that they can aim for to join later. But there's a lot to work out when you're brand new to figure out how to do. And you don't need to keep piling things on your plate just because. Figure out your business first, and how to do a decent cover, how to do a decent blurb, how to write a good book. And then how to make a relationship. I mean, there's a lot to learn. This doesn't need to be one of them, but it's waiting there for you when you get there. And there's a lot of great authors who we can invite who are doing well, who may not have heard of us yet, who would make great additions. So,
yeah, absolutely. Well said. Lovely. We're going to wrap up here. One last question I have. I had a guest on my show. He's fairly well known in the indie world. He has done very, very well for himself, largely without ever spending a dollar on advertising. His name is Ben Wolf. I invited him to be a month two author because I really like what he's doing, and I think that he kicks butt. And he's proven seller. He said, I don't want to do that because traditionally published authors don't have to take returns. And so that's probably the biggest sticking point. And it's something I think that we all have to face, is that to be part of SPAC, at some point, you're going to have to actually accept returns for your books. Like I said, I have an answer to that. I will talk individually off this podcast about how to do that, because it scared me at first. I realized, like, as we get bigger, returns will actually be a significant amount of money, as we have a large host of bookstores, you know, bringing in and bringing out books. But talk to the Ben Wolfs out there who are like, oh no, like, real authors don't take returns. Why should you take a return? Why is it a reasonable thing to do? And what are the upsides of being willing to participate in a program that could charge you for returns?
Can I hop on and answer? Because I have to go here in just a minute.
Yes, go for it, Naomi. Thanks.
All right. So returns aren't an issue for me because I sell on my own website. So if you send the returns back to me, I'm going to flip them over. I sell about 500 paperbacks on my website every month as it is. So I'm just going to flip them over and make more money on it. So it's not an issue to me the way it might be for other authors. But sure. I still don't see, I mean, at this point, authors, bookstores are ordering like five copies at a time, maybe sometimes even three copies. So if you get one or two of them returned, like, just do a giveaway with your readers on Facebook or your email group, or give it to a friend. Like, it's such a small number. I mean, most times when you're talking about returns really hurting an author, you're talking about like Target or Walmart or some monster platform like that, returning like, you know, 5,000 copies of a book. We're not there. And so I don't really envision a situation ever where we're not going to be able to, with the size of the businesses you are running in order to be a part of the program, I don't see any kind of situation where you can't somehow work the returns into your existing business model.
Face them in. Absolutely. Cool. Thank you, Naomi. How can everybody find you and connect with you after listening to the show?
You can find me at my website, naomirawlings.com. It's N-A-O-M-I, R-A-W-L-I-N-G-S.com. And everything's there. You can find my books, links to Amazon, links to my own store. So whatever you want. Free book if you want to read it. So, yeah.
Perfect. Thank you so much for your time. I look forward to the next opportunity to talk with you.
Thanks.
Yeah. All right. Bye. Nick, Martha, fight for it. Who wants to go next? Like, why is it okay to accept returns?
Well, first of all, I would say I'll give Ben a call and I'll whip him into shape. I think that's a ridiculous reason.
I love Ben. I mean, I literally will wave to him. We go to a lot of the same shows right now, and I'll wave to him and be like, "I'm selling nice. More than you." But no,
No. I know Ben. He's a good dude, and so I say this, you know, lovingly, but I think that's a ridiculous reason. First of all, traditional authors don't have to do a lot of things, but their publishers do. And I guarantee you that those publishers are accepting returns. And I guarantee you that the other option of not accepting returns is to destroy them. And I know that Ben knows this. And so I'd be really curious to see what the real answer, the real reason he would say no.
Sure.
Because I know he knows this. Anyway, and so not to cajole Ben, he's not here, but accepting returns is part of the game. And I have nothing to add other than what Naomi, you know, like just to, again, parrot what Naomi said, like, you get the return. Oh no, now you have your book that you can sell.
Exactly. And it's in great shape. So. You can literally sell it again. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Not a big deal to me at all.
Yeah. Martha.
So I would disagree with what Ben said traditional authors do get returns because they only pay you twice a year because they're going to reduce your royalties by whatever got returned. The publisher's not eating it. You are. Also, we're in a new venture. We're trying to do something different. And this is part of the game. And so, you know, you play part of the game and everybody's right in what they said about it's not a risk. And we have the advantages indies. If they return the books, then use them for something else or sell them or give them away. It's really not a big deal. And we're evolving. I mean, I would never want to stay out of a new venture just because of one little something. Then you miss being at the forefront. I'd rather be at the forefront and work it out than stand on the sidelines, but that's kind of my nature.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of an indie nature too, for the most part.
I think so. It's so interesting to be indie author because at the same time that you came here because the traditional world didn't want to accept you, there was something in you that said, no matter what it takes, I'm going to find my readers.
Right. But I would actually disagree. I was a traditional author. I didn't come here because I came here because I was tired of giving away money.
That's a great point too.
Yeah. And
that actually goes hand in hand with what I was going to say, which is that the reason that we do what we do is because we also know we can run a business. And being an indie author is a business, but being a traditionally published author is not, it's not that it's not noble. It is deeply noble. Still all of my favorite authors. When I say all, I mean all of my favorite authors are traditionally published.
Well, so a couple of realities about traditional land. They give you 3 months from when your book is published to be a hit before they pull it for themselves. Yeah. If the cover isn't working, tough luck. You can't change that cover. And so all the things that you put into process have to be perfect before the book comes out. The marketing is pretty much done before the book comes out because you've got 3 months of pushing it. That's a really weird dynamic because, you know, you do indie long enough, you know, four or 5 months in, you may be doing a new cover because you realize you really screwed the pooch on that one.
Yeah.
And so it's a business as well, but it's also a disconnected business because when I was an indie, a traditional author, we didn't share information as easily or as well because we didn't know each other. And so everybody kept reinventing the wheel, making the same mistake, misspending the money. Yeah. Indie authors tend to go as a pack. And when a new thing comes along, we call each other like, have you tried this? What has worked? And we tend to make fewer mistakes and we spot the bogus easier. We spot the great easier. Yeah. And we do things
shorter,
like this.
Shorter mistakes, not fewer, shorter mistakes.
Yeah, we
shorter, make shorter mistakes.
Well, sometimes we make fewer because I called somebody and they said, don't do it. And and also we tend to, I can work with Nick and with others because we're not under one house where we got to stick with the house. And I can reach out to whomever I admire, who I like their work, I like their ethics, you know, work ethics, whatever. It's a whole nother world. But being a traditional author was also a business. It just wasn't as easy a business.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's it is correct. The part of the reason I highlight the idea of the traditional author not necessarily being a business is because my definition of a business is you can actually have an impact on the outcome of the business that you are. If you're a traditional author, they are going to, in large part, schedule where you're going to go to do your readings, to do your appearances. And then other than that, you have to have your own money to do everything. And yet the books that they will allow you access to cost so much that it's very, very expensive and pretty much cost prohibitive to do what indies can do. And so that's the reason why I feel a little bit differently about the two, is that as an indie author, I can afford to treat this like a business, but as a traditionally published author, I just don't have the money to buy that many author copies and go out there on my own. Not to mention that any copy I sell that was an author copy I bought for myself doesn't count for my sales records, blah, blah, blah. We could go on forever. It's just
right. And they also a fallacy about traditionally published is that they do promotions for you. They do promotions right. for those who are already successful.
Yeah.
And you're on your own as much as an indie author, exactly the same if you're a new author. Yep. And so you're really gaining nothing. I could get them to send copies, promotional copies for free, but that was about it. And indie authors is definitely the way to go because you're going to keep more of the money. You're going to have more flexibility. You're going to have more people to talk to about how to run this business. And you're going to learn how to do it on a deeper, deeper level. So you're probably going to be more successful.
Yeah. Martha, you had a really fantastic interview on self-publishing formula with Mark Dawson. It was forgetting his name at the moment. He's not the actual one who does the podcast, but it's his podcast. I'd love to point people to that. So I'm going to put that in the show notes. But you are an industry expert, and I would love people to hear more from you. So where can people find you, connect with you, and learn more about what you're doing?
There's always the Facebook group, Martha Carr, and also authormarthacarr.com. You can find the store. That's a thing, too, that Nick can probably talk about as well. More and more of us indies are creating our own store and pulling people to directly to us and then to indie bookstores. It's kind of like we're all going back to the micro instead of the macro. And so authormarthacarr.com. You can also find links to Kickstarters. I'm a big Kickstarter supporter. Yeah. It's also because I tend to put gaming into my books. I'm a girl gamer. Kickstarter is the largest seller of board games. I don't know if anybody realizes that. So
awesome.
So that's where you could find me. I answer everybody. I talk to everybody like Nick and his, and I talk to him about his sneakers mostly.
I love how connected this whole, world is. So that's really fantastic. I didn't know before this that two of you knew each other, and I'm really happy about that. Martha, thank you for your time. Thank you for being one of the month one authors for SPAC. The cool thing about the position you're in, as far as I'm concerned, is until I have like really large market dominance, you're just the first author that goes into every store I sell. So that's kind of the benefit of being in the spot you're at right now. Pretty much nobody else is going to get the chance that you are. And yet I have made mistakes. And so thank you for bearing with me. Early mistake was I actually sent the wrong book to the first bookstore that we did.
Yeah. Yep. No, you sold the wrong book. You sold a friend of mine's book. But I was happy to fill that order. And my friend sold a book.
That's great.
So that was amusing.
Thank you for bearing with me.
I make mistakes on a daily basis. Who cares? I do a quick autopsy and I move on.
Yeah. Well, I love it. It's been a pleasure knowing you, and I look forward to the next opportunity to talk with you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. All right, Nick, round us out, my friend. I don't even remember anymore what the question was. I was praising Martha too much. I've lost track of this whole podcast. We're off the rails.
That's okay. That's okay. We ended with the right person, and we end with Martha. So I'll just say this. I am at nickthacker.com, but I'm imminently findable. So if there's a place – If you want to go see if I'm there, probably there, doing something. But check me out, nickthacker.com. You can find all the books and all the other nonfiction stuff that I'm engaged with, my relationship with Brett Digital, all that. That's the best place in the whole inner wide world to find me.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much, Nick. And I'm going to go ahead and end the recording now. So give me a sec here.
Thank you for listening to TRBM. The theme music was provided by the ever-talented Christopher Talon. And hey, if you liked what you heard, share this show with other readers, because what's the point of telling stories if nobody's listening?